This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We will not discuss private conversations in a public hearing. That was what today's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee boiled down to when the nation's top intelligence officials were asked repeatedly if President Donald Trump had asked them to push back against the FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign. Here's how Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, put the day's most pressing question.
In your experience, would it be in any way typical for a president to ask questions or bring up an ongoing FBI investigation, particularly if that investigation concerns associates and individuals that might be associated with the president's campaign or his activities?
Admiral Michael Rogers, director of the National Security Agency, responded.
In the 3+ years that I have been the director of the National Security Agency, to the best of my recollection, I have never been directed to do anything I believe to be illegal, immoral, unethical, or inappropriate. And to the best of my recollection, during that same period of service, I do not recall ever feeling pressured to do so.
But Senator Warner doubled down.
Did the president, the reports that are out there, ask you in any way, shape, or form to back off or downplay the Russia investigation?
I'm not going to discuss the specifics of conversations with the President of the United States, but I stand by the comment I just made to you, sir.
Rogers was referring to yesterday's Washington Post story that says President Trump asked Daniel Coats, the director of national intelligence, to get former FBI Director James Comey to back off from his investigation into the Trump campaign. The Post reported, quote, "The interaction with Coats indicates that Trump aimed to enlist top officials to have Comey curtail the Bureau's probe." But today, before the Senate Intelligence Committee, Coats refused to give details about his conversations with the president.
I do not feel it's appropriate for me to, in a public session in which confidential conversations between the president and myself, I don't believe it's appropriate for me to address that in a public session.
Well, Senator Angus King, independent from Maine, was not satisfied. He sharply questioned each member of the panel in turn. Here's his exchange with NSA Director Rogers.
Why are you not answering these questions? Is there an invocation by the President of the United States of executive privilege? Is there or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
Then why are you not answering
our
questions?
Because I feel it is inappropriate, Senator.
What you feel isn't relevant, Admiral.
King also questioned acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe about why he wouldn't reveal details of his conversations with his predecessor, James Comey. Here's McCabe.
It would not be appropriate for me, sir, to discuss issues that are potentially within the purview of the special counsel's investigation.
And that's the basis of your refusal to answer this question?
Yes, sir. And that, and knowing, of course, that Director Comey will be sitting behind
this
table.
So it's your
tomorrow.
Position that the special counsel's entitled to ask you questions about this, but not an oversight committee of the United States Congress?
Well, as he closed today's hearing, Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, asked each intelligence official to take a message back to the administration that they cannot hide things from the Senate Intelligence Committee and are required to be fully forthcoming. Burr then continued.
At no time should you be in a position where you come to Congress without an answer. It may be in a different format, but the requirements of our oversight duties and your agencies demand it.
Senator Warner then ended with this.
Again, I want to thank all the witnesses, but I come out of this hearing with more questions than when I went in.
Well, some of those questions may be answered tomorrow when former FBI Director James Comey is scheduled to testify before the same committee. His official statement was actually posted today, so there is so much to dig into. Let's do that with Matt Visor. He's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. He's been watching the hearing today, and he joins us now from D.C. Matt, it's good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I feel like we just took a roller coaster ride all day long from questions to not answering questions. I mean, what was this hearing like?
The hearing, your recap did it well, where there was a lot of back and forth. The reason for the hearing was to talk about FISA court orders, you know, something totally unrelated. But you had the top intelligence officials before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and they continued to press them on answers about their discussions with the president over the Russia investigation, and they pretty much stonewalled, you know, without citing executive privilege, which is a more formal process, and they didn't cite that, but they cited not wanting to discuss their private conversations with the president. And it got quite testy, particularly the Angus King exchange was fairly heated between them. Marco Rubio, some of the Republicans were also pressing them quite a bit, and John McCain as well. He's not on that committee, but he showed up anyways to ask some questions.
Yeah. So what do you? I mean, you mentioned that testy exchange between King and McCabe. I mean, what do you make of the fact that the acting FBI director basically said that he couldn't or wouldn't comment on his conversations with James Comey because of the fact that Robert Mueller is special counsel here, and he didn't want to interfere with that investigation?
Yeah, I mean, that got more into sort of who has the oversight, you know, and there was a very sort of testy moment, again, with Angus King sort of saying that Congress has oversight even more so than Mueller. So they kept sort of deferring to Mueller, saying that they treat investigations as things where you don't want to comment publicly on things, which triggered Mark Warner to say, well, does the President of the United States know that? Because, of course, President Trump in his Twitter feed has been commenting, you know, quite regularly about ongoing investigations here. So there was a lot of these moments of them trying to get these guys to say something, and they were sort of determined not to.
Do you think that there's likely to be any impact from the fact that these top intelligence officials wouldn't answer questions publicly before the Senate Intelligence Committee today? Is it likely to have an impact on the ongoing congressional investigations?
They may have to call them back. There was an appetite to do that, including potentially in closed session, to address some of the concerns of those testifying who don't want to talk publicly. But the senators feel a responsibility as a result of their oversight role to hear from them. So there was a possibility of having a closed-door hearing, even though some of the discussions are not classified. So there's not necessarily a legal reason for them to be done behind closed doors, but that seemed to be one potential avenue for the senators to get information from the intelligence community without having it done in a public setting.
All right, Matt. So let's talk about the big show, if I can put it that way, that's expected for tomorrow, because former FBI Director James Comey is going to sit at that very table and testify publicly and then also privately before the Senate Intelligence Committee. His prepared remarks were actually released today by the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I'm seeing here they're quite lengthy. And there's a paragraph in which Comey is expected to say that the president did ask Comey, quote, "I need loyalty, I expect loyalty." And Comey then is going to say that, quote, "I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence. The conversation then moved on." I mean, have you've had a chance to take a look at the prepared remarks that Comey's expected to give?
Yeah, they're 7 pages long, and, you know, critics of Comey's, including the president, call him a showboat, and, you know, his testimony sure does put on a show. I mean, there is vivid detail about his meetings with the president privately on several occasions. Comey made a point early in his testimony to say that he, after his first meeting with President Trump at Trump Tower, he went outside in his FBI vehicle and immediately typed out a memo on his laptop, which was something that he hadn't done in the past, he says. He met twice with President Obama privately, both of those in person. He met 9 occasions with President Trump over 4 months, growing so concerned at one point that he asked Attorney General Jeff Sessions to prevent the two of them from being in the room alone together. So Comey does, I mean, he confirms a lot of what has been in the news media,
right,
you know, over the past couple of weeks, about Trump asking him for loyalty, about Trump asking him to drop any investigation into his former NSA National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. There are instances like that, but in just greater detail than we had had previously.
Well, in fact, clearly James Comey has been an investigator, because the kind of detail he puts in this statement is, he talks about remembering which doors were open and closed in the Oval, and remembering, the door by the grandfather clock is the one he exited the Oval Office after one of these meetings with the president. And and as you said, he confirmed what's been reported in the press, that he says the president told him, quote, "I hope you can see your way to clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. I hope you can let this go." What can we anticipate hearing more from Comey after his prepared remarks yesterday? What kind of questions are the senators going to ask him?
I think it'll be interesting, how hard Republicans will be on Comey. If there are Republicans who try and discredit some of his testimony, if they consider themselves allies of the president, I imagine they'll ask him, questions about why he didn't put some of this information out sooner, or if he was so concerned about his private meetings with Trump, why he had 9 encounters with him one-on-one. I imagine that there will be some tough questioning. There will, from Democrats, I think, trying to elicit even more information. We have a lot in these in this 7-page of which is sort of Comey's introductory testimony. So I'm sure that we'll get more, and there'll be more back and forth and room for questioning tomorrow. But it certainly is kind of it's explosive in the sense that President Trump has so often criticized leaks and anonymous sources. Now you have an actual person who is testifying under oath tomorrow to these encounters with President Trump. Right. And I think that sort of changes the dialogue a little bit from anonymous sources and attacks on the news media to James Comey himself appearing in the halls of Congress.
Matt Visor, he's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. Matt, it's always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's time now for the Remembrance Project. Writer Alyssa Eli's look at the extraordinary lives of ordinary folks from our community. Today, Eli recalls a Boston journalist remembered as a mentor.
With a pair of glasses low on her nose and a continual cup of coffee, Helen Woodman Harrington ran the State House News Service from her desk in room 458. For newly minted journalists, it was a heady, hard-working chance to cover government in real time, running in and out of hearing rooms, scribbling in reporter notebooks, asking one more question they knew Helen would want to know about this week's Governor's Council meeting or that Community Reinvestment Act. Lisa Capone arrived fresh out of UMass Amherst in 1980 and worked at the news service for 6 years. She'd heard the editor liked Manhattans and smoked vigorously. She expected a grizzled presence.
Instead, there's this woman in a classic tweed skirt and sweater and, low sensible heels and a very calm voice who sort of ushered us through this initiation of what journalism really was.
There was nothing Helen didn't know about the Massachusetts governing process. She spoke State House fluently. News outlets, lobbyists, and trade organizations relied on her reporters, the kids, who would type their articles on carbon paper and stuff them into cubbyhole mailboxes for clients to use in their own publications. The kids were always on a deadline. Any given day might hold 8 committee hearings to cover, and the House and Senate in session, and the governor's schedule. But Helen made clear that speed and accuracy could coexist.
So they would gavel in at 11 o'clock in the morning, and typically do a few routine things, and then they'd recess and come in at 1 o'clock for their formal session, which could go until 5 or 6 o'clock, or it could go until 3 o'clock in the morning or until the next day. And we covered every second of it.
Helen did too.
If it was really late, she always stayed. She lived in an apartment that overlooked Boston Common on Tremont Street. And I remember she used to walk across that. We used to hate it because she would just, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and she'd walk home. Like it was nothing.
In the male worlds of politics and journalism, edges could be rough. But Helen was consistently infectiously genteel.
It was just somehow through osmosis we were we were sort of getting this transfusion of how to do our jobs and also how to treat people, how to live your life. I mean, these aren't lessons that are just good for journalism. These are lessons that are good for life. You know, be honest, be fair, listen, don't assume.
For 28 years, Helen would and did do anything for her kids and her wire service. She believed fervently that political journalism was the fourth branch of government, essential to the functioning of a citizen nation, and she thrived in the crucible of Massachusetts politics. At the same time, through all those years, which was a miracle in that environment, though not if you knew her, she kept her political opinions to herself.
Writer Alyssa Eli, remembering Helen Harrington. To suggest someone for Remembrance, email remember@wbur.org. We'll be back.